star date?
95639.25. Welcome, everyone, to the Star Trek podcast, Star Trek Discovery pod.
Grant, it's even funnier when you give us a star date.
Is it?
It is.
You like that?
I do.
I got to keep the tradition alive, man. Mike Moody, our fearless captain, is out this week. He probably has some sort of space-borne sickness.
And Dorian flu.
He's gross, all nasty right now, so we didn't want his face up in our recording space.
So would that make you number one then?
I am number one.
Nice.
I've graduated.
Well, you have the beard for it. You have the beard for it.
Nice.
And to push the buttons. All right, that was terrible. I'm sorry.
Yikes, you are no Riker, sir.
That hurts. I don't know who that is. Hey, like I said, we are Star Trek Discovery Pod. I'm Grant, and a little bit about me is that I'm the person on this podcast who doesn't really know that much about Star Trek lore outside of this show. This is the first show in the Star Trek franchise that I've ever watched. So I'm coming at this a little bit fresh. Bear with me if I ever make a mistake on here. Going around the room, we have...
I'm Clyde. I'm the self-delusional Trekkie. I thought I was a casual Trekkie, but it turns out that I've seen every movie, every episode, and read more books and fan fiction than I probably should have. Yeah, so that's me.
And third on Mike.
I am Ashley. I think that Clyde read the exact number of books he should have and has seen exactly as many episodes as he should have. And I mostly watched S-Tangy, was sort of my, franchise of choice series of choice, and quite a bit of the original series, but S-Tangy is probably my favorite.
You're also our honorary chief science officer because you have an extensive science background.
So. That's an exaggeration, and actually I think this one will also go to Clyde because he's an actual engineer.
I was an actual engineer.
you're our chief engineering officer.
Okay, fair enough.
Chief would be a stretch. Anyone who listened to this podcast and maybe gone to school with me knows that I would be no chief engineer. I'd be a random guy in the background.
Chief humility officer, yes. Then. Fine. Folks, we do want to say that before we dive into this episode, if you guys like the show and want to help us out, please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. It's easy to search for us, Star Trek Discovery Pod. And you can also check us out on our website. That's StarTrekPod.com. We are proud members of the Permanent Record Network. And we also wanted to say another way that you can help us out is go to Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. There you can make a per episode pledge, give us a dollar or two an episode. In fact, if you give us $2 an episode, that's access to our secret, exclusive, what do we call it? Something's lurk. Oh, is that maybe I shouldn't even reveal what it's called?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I don't know if it's like code if that gives people access. Anyway,
I have no idea.
We do have a Slack channel, is what I was trying to say, where people can chat with us about all sorts of Star Trek theories. We can talk about every episode as it comes out, excitedly theorizing for the next episode. So, $2 an episode for patreon.com/StarTrekPod. We appreciate all the support. All right, guys. So this episode was The Wolf Inside, which sounds like a sappy 80s song.
I was going to say that it sounds like it could have the same name as the porno version of this episode. Yeah.
I think Corey Hart wrote a song about this.
You know what? I'm not even sad.
This is episode 11 of chapter 2 of season 1. This was written by Lisa Randolph, who comes from writing on The Shield, Being Human, and Rain, and was directed by TJ Scott, who I guess got some accolades for his work on Orphan Black. And this was a interesting episode. I thought that it confirmed a lot of theories that were going on here. And let's do some hot takes. Clyde, kick us off.
Okay, so I love some of the fight scenes and the action and the surprise of seeing things last week. This week, I thought it was good, but I saw a lot of this coming, right? Like, I wasn't surprised that Vok was there. I wasn't surprised. I called it last week that I said the Emperor was going to be Georgiou.
Yeah, I think that was a good call there.
So, I mean, I was kind of like, all right. But, and I think my biggest problem was the whole Burnham, Tyler, her not wanting to shoot him. I kind of expected her. I know that this was her lover, but the minute that he started to seem like Vok, I really wanted her to just like cap him.
Dude, this was her first lover. I mean, and she's like championing all sorts of you know, understanding the enemy in this episode, only to be like, shoot, die. That'd be a bit opposite of everything else.
I mean, look, it worked out. And I think she was able to use him to get information back to Discovery. Turned out to be a good call. But I was just kind of like, why? Like, come on. Get it together.
I don't know.
She was raised as a Vulcan. She can be quite level-headed at times when maybe we couldn't be.
Yeah. Ashley, what'd you think?
So I wasn't here with you guys last week. I was traveling over Christmas, and I've been a little lukewarm on both of these two episodes. And I'm trying, I was kind of mentioning to this, you guys, not to you guys before this, not to be like one of those like bitchy fanboys who's like, I own this franchise. It's not what I expected. So I'm going to complain about it. But I guess for me is when I'm watching it, I am entertained and I am enjoying it, but when I was told that we were going to have a new Star Trek series, for me, what that meant is a show that takes place in space where we see the world through the eyes of people who approach adversity and curiosity and danger with kindness. And they're interested, they're patient, things of this sort. And that's what makes it really fun. And that's what makes it a cool kind of future for me. And it's what makes it different from Battlestar Galactica, Star Wars, Leviathan Wakes, all of these other ones. And so I'm trying to let go of that expectation a little bit. And in this last episode, I was kind of having a hard time.
Do you think it's because of the like mirrorverse, everyone has to be like this over the top bad guy, and like how much that's kind of dominating the actions of everyone else? Because we also do see,
yeah,
like Michael Burnham specifically championing that higher Starfleet cause of like, no, there's opportunity here to bridge the gap to find peace. And like, that seems to be what my limited understanding of Star Trek should strive toward.
For sure. And I think that Sarek's alternate verse, when he mind melds with her, and there are facts about her that he finds shocking, like, and I think he must know that she's from another universe and all of this is amazing to him. But one of the things he can't help but utter is the sudden understanding of the depth of human compassion. I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah.
But so I'm not saying it's not in this show. And in some ways, it might even be kind of heavy handed because, as you were saying, the mirror world is so bad compared to the ideal of Starfleet. But I guess for me, I want to go out and explore and see the universe and see relationships and see action and create history through the eyes of that positive world a little bit. For me, that's what's entertaining about Star Trek. So while it exists in this world, and some of this kind of feels like prologue, so we might even be getting there, when I'm struggling with the episodes, it's because what's fun for me is journeying with those people and not the Emperor, you know, the Imperial stormtroopers from Star Wars. Like, I don't want to hang out with them.
And all the heavy body armor, yeah, and all those, yeah.
I agree with you, Ashley, in the fact that we've been looking for this kind of character development, right? Now, the thing about Star Trek that really kind of just, I don't know, brings everyone in is that you start to love these characters. You feel like you know them. You feel like you'd want to be with them. You want to be them. And in the first chapter of the season, you got to keep in mind, we're still in season one. Right. We still never got to the point where we like, oh, I really know these people, right? Like, we don't really know Stamets. Culber's dead, and we know very little about him. Like, so there hasn't been a whole lot of character development. Now we're in this mirror universe where I think we're learning more about Tilly than anyone else.
Yeah.
But everyone else is trying to pretend to be something else. It really feels like we're watching, but we're not. There's this emotional connection to the characters that I still don't think I have.
Man, it's interesting because my take on this episode, I liked last week because it just seems so like sci-fi satisfaction. We're already familiar with this world and everything's turned on its head. We're in this mirror world where there's evil doppelgangers and people have to like fight against their initial impulses on everything. It's this struggle between the duality of self that we've already like discussed a bunch, probably ad nauseum on this episode, this podcast. But I'm still just kind of really gravitating toward that. And I don't have the, I don't want to call it baggage, but I don't have, I guess, the history of what Star Trek before should be. And I don't have that certain expectation that like it needs to strive for, I guess, not pure optimism, but you know, like that kind of loftier ideal. Like I like the gritty drama and the backstabbing and questionable motivations. So when I saw this episode, you know, we've had a lot of these theories about like how the whole Vok and Ash thing, we kind of got it verified last week, but now we get a little bit more clarification on where that whole relationship lies. I thought that like just jumping to the point where like it's not even like a hidden secret anymore, it's out in the open and now all of them have to deal with that is great for us, the audience. They're not just stringing us along forever with something like the audience already figured it out and they have done the big reveal to the main characters in an appropriate amount of time. I thought the episode itself was a little bit curiously slow, just with like the send on a mission and we got to go investigate while, you know, in the background, we understand there's this kind of craziness of them lost in this world and they're desperate to figure out what's going on and they're deep undercover, right? But then we get all these hooks right at the end. We get the big confrontation with Ash and Vok. We get the big confrontation with Michael and Ash and Vok and that kind of that big jarring turn. We get the drama with Stamets dying, which, you know, we already had an issue last week with the whole bury your gaze, and this was suddenly bury your gaze to electric mycelium boogaloo.
Okay, so I'm curious here. When you saw Stamets flatline,
mm-hmm.
did anyone here think that he was dead?
No.
Oh, I looked at it. I was just like, damn, are they going to do that again?
I would have been really upset.
I wasn't even thinking about from a trope standpoint. I was just thinking he literally is one of the key players in this. And I was like, there's no way. He's too good.
I mean, I definitely thought, just to wrap up my thought, I was like, I really liked how everything like just kind of climaxed at the end and the big reveal of like Giorgio. But with Stamets like flatlining, I thought they've alluded enough to this guy kind of transcending space and time that if his body within the Discovery ship flatlined and died, his character is not dead. He has somehow entered into this other world because we get a glimpse of it in the very beginning. And then later we get him doing that, like what dreams may come, walking through mushroom forest thing, whatever's
talking
going on there.
To another version of himself.
Do you think
where I can
be
only assume David Bowie and Prince both live on?
Oh yeah.
In addition to in my heart, obviously.
So let's go ahead and talk about Stamets then, I guess. Let's go ahead and start with him since that'll probably be the easiest to cover. So it starts with him kind of babbling.
Yeah.
And talking about
the trees.
The forest is dark, but I can still see him through the trees, is what he says. Which, presumably, he's talking about Culbert, who his boyfriend, husband, I'm actually sure what the relationship was a husband?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Who just died in the last episode. And I went and looked back, and episode 9 was actually called Into the Forest I Go. And I was curious about like where that phrase comes from, and it's a quote from John Muir who says, "And into the forest I go to lose my mind and find my soul." And people were saying that was the chapter 1 conclusion for the season, for the first part of the season. And they thought that was talking about Burnham, but now in this new context with him talking about it,
it
really seems to be about Stamets too. Well,
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to is I'm waiting for Super Stamets.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm waiting for him to wake up and to have this trans universal power or understanding, right? To be this sentry, guardian, beacon-like character where my guess is the first thing he's going to do is just go, Cobra, alive, and he's going to wake up. Like, I'm waiting for the almighty, all-powerful Stamets to return.
I mean, if he does kind of come back in that capacity, I feel like he would be sort of like Dr. Manhattan in a way.
But I think it's going to be one of those tropes where it's temporary.
Like okay. It would have to be, right?
He's going to have, and then boom, he's regular, you know, Paul Stamets.
Yeah. But I like wonder, like, a guy who's suddenly connected to the greater universe and like all space and time and has that understanding, doesn't the quarrels of humans and Klingons and Vulcans within the context of the greater universe and the greater infinite time just seem so trivial?
Only until he has amnesia. I mean, only to the mind wipe.
Yeah.
And then he's like, wait, what? What happened? And then he's just, and then all that's solved.
I don't know. Also, like, not, I mean, you guys know me. I'm kind of like, I can be quite cynical and bitchy, so it's going to be funny coming from me. But I mean, he's clearly like one of the driving things when he's in that space is this person he loves. So I don't know that he could let go of that. You know, I think with all of the universe and all of the everything that's going on in his head, and it's so crazy, it seems like the one thing that he can see is the one he loves, which is very sweet.
That's
I know.
Beautiful. that makes me feel a lot better, yeah, actually.
So, I mean, I don't know. It would be a very big character switch for that to suddenly not matter.
Well, yeah. And I think that's an interesting theme because if you look at kind of this Ash Tyler Burnham situation, Laurel said the poem, was ready for Vok to kind of appear, and it didn't take. And it looked like what was tethering kind of Tyler to the forefront was this love for Burnham, which seeing Vok in person kind of shattered. But again, it was this kind of, I think this, you're looking at Tyler being tethered to Burnham and Culber and Stamets being tethered. I think you're kind of seeing it.
That's so good. That's like there. Tethers his humanity in both yeah. cases.
It's all like right. It's like a parfait of tethering, just layers upon layers.
Layers. It's like an onion. Tethers.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, I was one thing that I was really happy about the way that all of that went down was that it wasn't drawn out the thought that Stamets killed Dr. Culbert. That yes. was going to irk me, so that immediately everyone was like, well, first of all, Stamets didn't do it. He's clearly having some sort of brain thing. Like, it's not murder.
Even if he did do it.
Yeah, he didn't do it. But it was only corrected. Like, what literally happened was corrected, like, 15 minutes later. I really liked that decision for a lot of reasons.
Although, it just seems so weird to me, in such a high-tech spaceship, that they don't right. have cameras.
Right.
How do you not have a camera in your medical bay?
Right.
You would want to know what's going on there.
Especially.
That's one of the most important places.
Where you undergo and test crazy people, you might want some video footage. No, but to your point, Ashley, I think that's one of the things I love about this show is that sci-fi shows can get real kind of campy.
Yeah.
And they can fall on these elements, these tropes that are a little bit annoying. And my least favorite kind of vehicle in shows, and I hate to say it because I think
Pontiac Aztec.
Kind of like that.
No one likes the Pontiac Aztec.
But like I...
Except Walter White.
Except for Walter White.
Topical. Topical.
It is when they do the reveal to the audience of something that you know. And then they just, it goes on and on forever
yeah.
where the characters don't know. Or it's like, oh, this big reveal to us and no one else sees it. And so the fact that these things came up, right? Like we figured out last week that Vok and Tyler were the same person. And so the first thought was, well, okay, so how long?
I mean, we figured that out like episode 3.
Well, they revealed it. They confirmed it last week. And the thought was, well, how long is this going to go on? Especially he's interacting. And again, 1 week and now everybody knows. And I appreciate that.
I mean, this is kind of the shift in modern television too. Like they don't seem to wait too long dragging out plot points. It's more like, hey, put a plot point out there, show it, wrap it up, move on to the next thing. I mean, I feel like one of the first shows that like really did that so well was The Shield, speaking of our writer in this episode, Lisa Randolph. But, you know, it's just like, make a new plot, run to the next one, go, write yourself into a corner, figure out how to write yourself out. And this show is moving very quickly with that. I'm very impressed.
I think part of that, though, helps that we're not looking at 27 episodes.
Yes.
Because I think one thing that I've just learned by watching television now and then going back and watching television that has like 27 episodes is that's just really hard to do. Especially if you're writing an hour-long drama, like 27 or 24 hours of television, like you can't help but you're stretching it out. And at some point, you're going to get a weak spot. And I think when you condense it to even 18, what we're seeing is just more thoughtful. And you don't have to draw it out. It's, you know, wrap it up, share it, move on to the next thing.
So if we move over to talking about Burnham and her plot. We start off with her doing her Dear Diary as she does the star date or star log or whatever it's called. I don't know what it is.
I don't know that she was doing that. I think it was inside her head. I think we were just listening.
Or was she talking to Ash?
I think in the beginning he wasn't there. Uh-huh. And she couldn't say some of those things out loud to record to any log or anything else. She can't record that. Like we're listening
fake
to her
captain's log.
Yeah.
I'm in a sweet, sweet onesie and thinking about how much I miss my real ship right now.
Yeah.
Nobody listened to this.
Who's wearing some sexy outfits there?
I'm not complaining.
No. We also get some shirtless Ash, so it's like, oh, those two are hot and heavy in the bunk, but not anymore.
Well, and then you get a little bath time with Saru.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that was such a sad turn for Saru.
Oh,
that,
I know.
Like his, what is he called? A Kelpian? Is
yeah,
that right?
Kelpin.
Yeah, the Kelpians there are slaves. And, you know, this is what we were kind of guessing at before. We're like, Saru can't be just like part of the crew on this other ship because they're a bunch of super racist humans.
Well, so I actually had a question for y'all that I made a note of to talk to you when it comes to Saru. Well, should we come back to that maybe? Should we stick to Burnham?
Let's do
okay,
it.
It's related to Burnham.
Okay.
Okay. So when backwards world Saru, mirror world Saru.
So you've got mirror and prime.
Yeah.
So you're saying mirror Saru.
Yeah. Got it. Mirror Saru. So when mirror Saru comes across prime Burnham, my understanding is that he can kind of sense danger and he can sense.
So you think he immediately knew she's good.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like he must know because he has, I don't want to call it psychic because, you know, they're sort of pointing out it's more of an evolutionary instinctual ability to tell when he's safe and when he's not.
And the thread gangling.
Yeah. His gangling comes out when something bad walks in. It happened when Ash came out. I think in the last episode, we saw it for sure. And maybe before then, Ash Valk from the prime timetable. And so I would think that if the absence of being afraid, which he must constantly feel from the mirror Burnham, the absence of that, even if it's not that he can actually sense safety, but just the absence of being in danger, he must know, right?
That's such a good point because, you know, that leads to like him suddenly being there to rescue her with his like incredible Kelpian strength. He just takes Valk and tosses him like a ragdoll across the room.
It was awesome.
It was such an awesome scene.
It was.
But like him being there made me wonder, like, has he was he there for a while? Did he hear their conversation? Does he like now have a better understanding of what's going on with her? And maybe then she still has another confidant on the ship if she's going to be stuck there for another episode.
I wondered the same thing. And I was thinking he must have heard something, right? And some of that conversation. But also, she called him Saru,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's interesting because he said slaves don't have any name. So you have to think that he has not had a name for a very long time. They may not even know what his name is. And for her to call him by his name had to go, something's not right.
Right? Wait, but she said something like,
for a respected friend of mine, I'm calling you this name. Like, I know
yeah,
somebody.
Yeah, he must have been like,
if somebody said, you know, I'm going to call you Clyde because I respect a guy named Clyde. I mean, like, that's very weird saying is, that's my name.
And it's not a common name.
Not a common name.
Like, if I'm bathing some dude, he's like, I'm going to call you Ashley out of respect for another friend of mine. That would come out as weird.
Why are you just bathing a dude? Well, I mean, also weird.
I'm just trying to put myself in those shoes.
And here's the thing. And they didn't know your name. Like, and no one knows your name is Ashley. Like, it's a bit kind of odd. So,
since my real family called me that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you're right, though, Grant. I think what we might be looking at as is a confidant for her. I mean, because, you know, Lorca's all like, you're not alone. You've got me. I'm like, really, dude?
How evil
I don't think so.
How evil is Lorca? By the way, it's like he's getting tortured in that thing. And I'm like, that's probably like not the worst place for that guy to be because he just had some reactions that like when she's like, hey, evil Starfleet wants me to go blow up this planet and like commit genocide.
He's like, yeah, go.
Yeah, he's like, gotta do what you gotta do. And it's like, fuck you, Lorca. That's not the Starfleet way. And which, you know, going back to your point, Ashley, about like there seems to be a loss of this kind of these higher ideals because it's just going for this kind of drama here. I thought like her kind of hearkening back to like the core mission there was a nice thing. And like her referencing this coalition of hope as she calls those other aliens and like seeing that those aliens as aspirational and also seeing the bigger solution to, you know, world prime world with like recruiting whoever the Firewolf is, who turns out to be Vok, to their cause could be the solution to everything. I was
guess
like,
it's not.
I was like, oh, that's pretty great there.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess for me is like, I think I can hang with this universe. Maybe, though, we can have the occasional episode where the people who are exploring the universe out of curiosity, we can just hang out with them for a little while because I just think that's fun. That's all. I guess that was my only point with Elvis.
I think there are a couple things that are interesting to me regarding that. One, and I mentioned this before, normally when we see a mirror universe, it's like one episode
right.
or two, right? And for those of you who are curious, I did go back and watch the Mirror Universe episode of Enterprise too.
Oh yeah,
just to make sure that we understand.
We got
what
some
the
comments
Defiant
last
was.
Week. Yeah, regarding the Defiant, and I feel like some of those complaints did not listen to like the rest of our episode before they complained because yeah, we said there was like a couple different Defiants, and then. It was like, but this one's most likely referring to the original series. And people were like, it's talking about the original series. You guys got to go watch those episodes. And I was like, wait, but that's what we said. But I'm getting a little dose of what these Trekkies are like, I guess.
Welcome to the world. But I'm kind of curious about how long I'm going to be really pulled in to this mirror universe, right? Like, this is the first time that we've kind of seen this thing go on. I'm a little anxious about understanding how this unfolds. And maybe that's part of it, is that it could be different or there is like kind of like Lost, there is no formula. But it could be interesting. And
what did you say about Lost?
I'm just saying it doesn't.
There was a plan.
There was, but it doesn't conform to a plan that we were used to. And so normally in a situation like this, at some point we figure out where is this about being in the mirror universe, or is there that time limit on the mirror universe? We're just kind of rolling with it.
I think for me, I'm reminded a little bit of like the first of the more recent Muppet movies where they have the Moopits and they're like, we're a cynical act for a cynical world. And they're just like, what? That's a little bit how I was feeling, I think. It's just like, it's a cynical Star Trek for a cynical world.
Well, and Grant, I like what you, I think you said it. Or did Mike say it? But the idea that the Lorca that we're looking at is actually from this universe.
He's gotta be.
I'm
okay,
all
I wanted
on
to talk to you guys about that because that is really interesting to me. And if we can switch our Lorcas back and like the first season is that's kind of the larger story arc and there are smaller stories along the way, like the one that we saw when Saru and Burnham go down onto the island. Then we get our captain back, season two, another weird, crazy big story arc mixed in with some smaller kind of episodes where we go to weird alien planets. We misunderstood each other, but we all learned something. Also, Vulcans, that was fun. I'll be super on board.
Are we going to get a Lorca that has a goatee, though? Because we get Sarek with a goatee, and that's like such a Mirrorverse thing, isn't it?
It is a bit of a, like, facial hair is a big mirror universe thing.
But
doesn't Evil Bender have a goatee in Futurama? Yes. I think the evil version always has a goatee.
Lorca, like, gives this kind of curious, knowing glance near the end when Georgiou pops up. And I think he even gives, like, a bit of a bow. I mean, maybe I need to go back and check that.
It's subtle.
But I feel like he was starting to give a bow, too. And I'm like, oh, this is his world. And that makes me wonder if some sort of freak accident, maybe that, what was the battle they keep referencing that he was in?
The Battle of the Bind. Oh, no, no. You're talking about the one where
he sacrifices the ship.
He's the only survivor of his ship.
Like the Bursar or something. I don't remember what it was.
No, I think that's probably
maybe
it.
Maybe that jumps him over to the other universe.
Which does have a lot of parallels to what actually happened to Lorca's character in this universe. Because when they're looking up who's who, mm-hmm. Burnham died trying to fight him, and then he was like the lone survivor and is now rogue.
So him oddly surviving could be like they switched or something, mm-hmm. right?
Could be. And I do think that that's really interesting. And
well, listen to this. What if that, sorry, I'll listen to this, but what if that means that the reason that Lorca in the Primeverse, the evil Lorca in the Primeverse, went and like recruited Burnham from prison was because he knew that Burnham, if he could take her back to the Mirrorverse, was already an immediate link to Georgiou, and that's like a way to get at the Emperor. Like, wouldn't that make sense? Like, what was his motivation otherwise in that universe? Like, oh, I gotta have her. But suddenly, it makes a lot more sense. I'm gonna get Michael Burnham from this universe, who, you know, I just had an altercation with and died, potentially, or got burst over into this universe. Sorry, this is getting maybe a little bit confusing.
Well, I think that's an interesting point in and of itself, is I'm wondering, is this getting confusing to the casual watcher, right? Like I've said many times, the thing I think that is great about this series is you don't have to have seen every single Star Trek. You don't have to have seen any Star Trek series before this one to enjoy it. You don't even really have to be a hardcore sci-fi person to enjoy this series. But now it's starting to get a little bit complicated with like the Mirror versus Prime. I'm wondering, you know, Grant, as someone who this is your first kind of foray into Star Trek, is it getting a little complicated?
I mean, not for me. This is my bread and butter. I love it when it goes all crazy like this. I'm like,
he was
yes.
gonna Octagon fight you over Lost.
Yeah,
he was.
But no, I think I'm on board with what's going on here. I don't think it's too complex because I think the main storyline is pretty good for a casual viewer, and then they're offering all of this, these additional clues if you kind of want to play the game and jump in further and speculate as
wildly
as we like to do here a bit.
Well, I do think that that's one of, so there were character reasons and at least the characters I've seen them develop so far, reasons that I liked that the reveals that happened in the second half of the first season happened so quickly. But there are also kind of more, I guess, from a writing perspective, more from like a technical, the way the show arc would work, reason why I liked that those happened. Stamets's name got cleared. What really happened came out. Vought came out, kind of a deal. Because once you're running two timelines, you might have captains who are switched. People who were dead are alive here and may not be alive in the other one. And now in the mirror world, you have a character, Ash from the Prime World, who's actually Vok from the Prime World. You need to start cleaning that shit up.
Yeah.
Before it's like...
They started fixing some stuff.
Yeah, they started clearing
Let's
that
kill
up.
Kill Vok here so there's no more confusion here. And we have Ash Vok. That's the only one that exists in either universe.
Yeah, and I thought she did a great job, like, because it didn't feel forced, but it happened and we moved on.
So, are you guys curious about what's going on in the Prime universe?
Not particularly.
Because, I mean, you've got this evil Discovery that's over there.
I mean, I guess. You think we might, like, jump over to that ship and, like, see a weird mirror Primeverse episode?
So, I think that if we got a standalone episode that was in the Primeverse, people would lose
that?
Do
we know we have a Discovery over there? I thought it might have gotten blown up.
I think that's what Saru said, was like, there's a chance that they swap spots.
And if they say that, I think it's because they want the audience to think that's what happened.
Right. Okay. Right? But yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
So I think the watchers could. I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to see how it plays if we had the standalone episode, but also if we don't, then it kind of leads me to think that they're never going back to that. And again, we're going to go back to this sliders theory that I'm having.
Sliders.
And if you're not familiar with sliders, it's a sci-fi show where they were traveling from universe to universe, and in each universe, it was something that was slightly different, trying to get back home. I'm wondering if that they're going to start jumping and never quite get back to Prime.
Well, so far we're aware of two universes, a third if you include the Chris Pine movie, right?
Which we are not leaving out the universe in which Chris Pine is in.
But if we see Stamets in that little garden, there's two of them, and like a third one pops up and a fourth one, then suddenly it's like, oh yeah, okay. There's potential for a bunch of universes here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be interesting.
There's potential for a bunch of universes with us.
Can I take a step back here and ask you guys a question about this Mirrorverse?
No. Of course.
We have evil Clyde. Clyde would have never said that.
So I do have facial hair.
So here's what I'm wondering. Star Trek really tries to be... I brought this up on TV Dudes as well, and I was met with, you don't know what you're talking about. But maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But it seems like Star Trek really tries to at least be pseudo-scientific. It tries to have some sort of scientific basis for what it's going for here. And alternate realities fit into that. But this idea of a mirrorverse in which all of our characters are still somehow their history, despite being evil and all their ancestors being evil, still resulted in the breeding and relationships that would breed those particular people, and that those particular people would still form a spaceship that is modeled in the same way as the Discovery or whatever else, and that these particular people would still rise to power in particular ranks and not be dead at that certain point, seems not just like rare, but it seems completely impossible.
So you've got to understand the theory of the alternate universe. And the idea is, it's not that their wholesale changes, but it's their very, it's like one decision. Imagine if you made one decision differently, right? So you go to Starfleet, but you major in, I don't know, wormhole theory instead of quantum mechanics or something like that. Like, it's one slight thing.
So was everything going like exactly the same up until just around this generation where they went, hey guys, let's all be weirdly evil all of a sudden?
No, I think
they switched personality.
I thought we got
Does that make sense?
I thought we saw a glimpse of. No. What I'm thinking of is when I went back and watched Enterprise in the in their mirror universe. What happens is, if you've seen kind of the Cochrane, where the Vulcans come and they make first contact, and he's there and he's the creator of the warp drive and everything. What happens is when they get out of the ship, the group of people who are there shoot the Vulcans, right? And so if you're thinking of, if we're so xenophobic, right, if we are humans are the best and everyone else sucks, then that could have started very early and created the society where instead of being explorers who want to go and be neighborly and said we just want to become, you know, militia and kind of keep to ourselves and keep pure and essentially exactly like the Vulcans. I think we heard kind of Vok talk about that a little bit in this episode where it's, you know, you know, T'Kuvma was always kind of preaching keep Klingons pure. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what you're looking at, is if the decision to include, to be inclusive, or the decision to be exclusive. I think that's probably the big change, the big decision that was made in this universe.
I mean, it still just seems like it's permeated to their personalities being so different. And it's, I don't know. I like, even within a sci-fi verse, it feels like if it's not something that I need to necessarily, I just need to like turn my head and just shrug my shoulder and say, I am just going to accept this, rather than there can be a logical explanation for why this might exist in this universe.
But also think about the title. So the title is The Wolf Inside, right? And I think, you know, one of the things that I was trying to allude to last
week. Everyone's got that bad boy inside them.
Yes. And what happens when you...
You know what I mean, Ashley.
Oh, I'm picturing myself with a goatee.
but think about it. Like, if you're in a society where you're supposed to do the bad things, the things that you kind of know that you're not supposed to do, and you do that for a while, like, that's got to change a little bit. It's like an actor, you know, pretending to be a bad guy. Like, if you go deep enough, won't some of that rub off on you? And I think what we're talking about is here's a universe that's kind of like that, where your people are being the bad guy. And you see Captain Killy and Giorgio, who's just like, you know, not wise, but just a boss and angry.
Yeah.
So this is somewhat related to all of this. I guess for me, when it comes to, I guess before I go to that first, for me, Star Trek's technology and interpretations of the universe tend to side more on a scientific side than, say, Star Wars. For sure. But I don't think that that means it's super
perfect. You got a problem with a lightsaber? The technology behind a lightsaber?
Oh, absolutely not. No. I love Star Wars.
They use crystals. What do you got against crystals?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We were talking about the difference between the two. And they tend also to take a higher interest in the tech side of things than, say, when I think about like Leviathan Wakes, those sorts of things where it's more, or Battlestar Galactica or Firefly, which is really more of like a cowboy space odyssey than
it's
it is.
Space Western. Space Western. Awesome.
Yeah, and it's awesome. It's awesome, but it's just not interested in the tech. Star Trek is particularly interested in tech, but it doesn't mean that it necessarily is perfect. So I guess that's what I would say to your initial question, but there is something I want to talk to you guys about that is sort of related to this that's a little bit different. Okay. So when I was in the Mirrorverse and I'm watching this super brutal like regime, human regime that's like in charge of everything, and I'm watching how they operate, what I want to know is how those people ever built a starship. Because the Klingons, it is true that they have a fairly brutal society that respects physical strength. Like, if you're going to be in charge, you have to actually be physically strong in addition to being a leader. Even in STNG and later series where they're not the enemy and they're not super racist or anything like that, you know, that's just the way that their society is. But they have a very strict honor code. There's a lot of discipline to their society. There's a lot of hierarchy.
And respect for the chain.
And respect, yeah. And if you remove that and you put into place this backstabby, brutal society, where does that society get their warp drive? Because how do you ever cooperate?
I think it's...
So if I was going to be that, in Itchy and Scratchy episode 23, Itchy plays Scratchy as a xylophone. He hits one note, one bone, and clearly we hear two notes, kind of fan person, which I am not. I am able to say, I'll just let this the fuck go. But when I was watching this, that is what was going through my mind when in regards to the tech. Thoughts go.
No, I mean, obviously, I agree. That's a little bit more specific than my issue of just like, how does that work? But yeah.
Well, I mean, that's interesting because if you think about alien culture in an environment like that, the easy answer would be they stole it, right?
That's true.
Like that would be, if you were really looking at how this happens, you see an alien culture where they're so violent or they're so divisive that they end up stealing their technology.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that working.
Yeah, I don't think that happened here, but that's a very good question. And when you think about the Klingons, they are a warrior race, and you're right. Like, so there are traditions and history and honor, and I don't know that we're seeing a lot of that in this kind of mirror Starfleet. It's just...
They're just dicks.
They're just dicks.
They're just dicks.
Mean all the time.
Well, let's jump back to the episode.
I think what I've noticed is that it seems like they're more like the Sith in Star Wars, whereas there's this, you know, you become the best by killing the person in front of you, right?
And there's an honor to that.
And there's this expectation that... You know, your number one is going to try and kill you at some point.
Right, but in lieu of having the magic or the force,
right,
Where does your training come? Where does literally the phaser you're holding come from? I mean, that takes like an assembly line. That takes.
Do you guys understand what society means?
So yeah, I think my like whiny fanboy point was with this episode in regards to its tech was that. But yeah. I'm also going to let that go. It's not important to me. Just.
But jumping back to Burnham's mission, she has to go. She decides to go and like broker a deal, and that's where we get the big reveal of Vok as well as Sarek popping up with his goatee and doing the mind meld thing. But I thought getting to see Vok was pretty interesting because we get to see not only the internal struggle that's going on with Ash character, which I thought he did pretty well with. I mean,
I thought so too. I thought he nailed it.
That's a tough role to go through, and him just like constantly having this tick and struggling through it until we get the great confrontation between him and Michael. But before that, him challenging this whole idea of what it means to be a Klingon and how the Mirrorverse Vok has found that he can find a way to not have that conflict and still see pride in his own race of people, but also champion the uniting with other people for a better cause. I think what that is showing us is like Ash was fighting. Ash is obviously the immature Vok who can't handle this kind of idea because he's a zealot. And once he finally lets loose, he's in full control of Ash's body, it seems. But also, it seems like now that they're trapped in this Mirrorverse, I wouldn't be surprised to see if this Ash ends up becoming the savior of the Earth Prime or the Universe Prime, where he does kind of learn to grow. You know, he's going to stay in prison for a while, but he's going to learn to grow and understand the human side of himself and be able to come back and broker that deal and make that peace.
So I want to say that if you go back and listen to like episode 2 or 3 of us, I said that what I was hoping for and what I wanted to see would happen is if ultimately Vok is the character that leads to this treaty between the Federation and the Klingons.
I remember that. Prescient.
But as
Clyde is ahead of his time, y'all.
But as I see this now, I think you're interestingly kind of right on target, because one of the things that we hear Burnham say is they say, you know, are you not the murderer of this or the slayer of this or whatever? And she says, I'm not that person anymore. And I was thinking, wow, we could see Vok be that person.
See, like, we're getting the redemption of Burnham and, like, how she conducts herself here. She shows that she's not so impulsive and cutthroat to save our own asses. She's looking at the bigger ideal when she goes to try and broker the deal and save the lives of those people on the planet. But also, we like that sort of idea of redemption seems to be it seems to be what they want to carry through in the plot for Ash. I would think like they lead us to believe she's going to kill him, but she's already shown that she has a lot more compassion. And Sarek says it himself, a human so full of compassion, like you were saying, Ashley, that she not only saves him, but figures out a way to transport him back onto the main Discovery ship so that he can be in prison there and they can figure out more. But I mean, and also to be a transport for the data she needed to leak out of there.
That was solid,
right?
That was so good.
It's like
I loved
a great
that
way to like use multiple plots for one purpose.
I loved that.
I will say there's a number of things where I'm like, okay, I know what's about to happen. I didn't see that coming.
Me neither.
I did.
Nice grant.
Like, I thought Stamets was dead. I did not. I was like, oh, they might just kill him here. But I was like, I bet she would transport him and then have the other ship transport him. I was like, yes, I guessed one.
Yeah, I'm just, the Wilson Cruz thing is still kind of like, he can't quite be dead. I'm just not used to a Star Trek where you kill off main characters. Like, for the most part, you kill off red shirts. So you're going to try and kill Stamets. This is not Game of Thrones, and he's not Ned Stark. I'm not believing it, right? I'm not believing anyone was is going to die. They almost had me with Tyler, and I was like, wow. I was like, there's no way. And then I'm looking at him in space and going, well, maybe I'm... Oh, no, there it is.
Yeah, I mean, I could see people... For me, I could see people dying in this one. And that's actually one of the things I do like. Like, I do like a world with consequence. Yeah. And I don't mind that it's a Star Trek franchise with consequence and that main characters could die. But... I guess I thought Ash Vok was...
Don't you dare call him Ash anymore. Don't you dare. He's no human.
I thought he was dead. I did not think Stamets was. And I wasn't... I was shocked with what happened to Colbert because it happened so quick. I was like, oh my God. But that type of injury is not beyond, depending on when they found him... I didn't necessarily think at the time, I don't know now, and I'm not on the deep web with y'all, as to that being beyond their tech to fix. That kind of, so I was like, and so at this point he might be dead, but if in the next episode he was in a sick bay, then I would assume he was still alive.
It sounded like, you know, now I need to go back and watch. Maybe they were a little bit coded in how they talked about Colbert. When Tilly and Saru were talking about him, because I thought they were basically like, oh yeah, he's dead, but maybe they weren't, and maybe it was more like that Ash was like, oh yeah, I killed him.
The words that they used were homicide and murderer.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
They said, do you think that we have definitive. A murderer on the loose?
That's okay.
At large.
You're right.
And, you know, this is our first like they used homicide and murderer. And so, at least by my recollection, please, if I'm wrong, I'll go back and watch. Don't tweet us. But I think that's what they were looking at. So, and when they were deciding, or when Saru decided not to tell Burnham on the other ship, I'm still waiting for him to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tilly did say, she's like, well, Stamets didn't do this either way. He's not the murderer. And so, and I do recall that, because it was part of a conversation that I was kind of happy was happening. But no, I didn't think Stamets was dead.
I saw a couple other interesting things I wanted to bring up. One was, we see a couple of these other aliens when they go down to the planet.
Yes. Tellurites, Andorians.
Oh, Andorians!
Were Andorians ones with the purple?
Yes, the blue ones.
Now, did we see other Vulcans on the planet that did have hair? Because I thought I saw some hairier Vulcans that kind of looked a bit more like, what's his name? Worf? And I was like, oh, some of them got hair over here.
So
they're like, okay. The edgy hippie Vulcan?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, wait, because I don't think you caught it. He said Vulcans like Worf. We are 11 episodes in, and Grant
damn it, I did it again.
confusing Klingons. Vulcans and Klingons.
Klingons, I meant Klingons.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening close enough.
Don't call
that. Oh, the Klingons.
Harry Klingon.
Klingons.
They're
did
such
not
a
catch
funny
it.
Peoples to confuse.
It is, but I love it. It's. I think it's. I love the fact that it keeps happening. I was so.
I'm glad you called me out rather than the listening audience.
I was so consumed with trying to figure out if Laurel was in the background because I'm like, well, who are the other Klingons I know, and whether or not T'Kuvma was going to show up. Then no, I didn't see any hairy.
I did see the Klingons. One. I think she was a Klingon, like the one little Klingon. It would be like if suddenly they put Klingon makeup on me. Like she just looked like a normal size like girl. Klingon. Yeah, she's like a teenager Klingon. I think she was maybe like fourth or so in line. Again, don't quote me on that. It was like, you know, it happened quickly. But I was like, is that a Klingon? She just looks like a human dressed up as a Klingon for Halloween. she was cute.
Another thing I wanted to bring up though is. We see this captain of this other ship as a hologram talking to Burnham. Did you see him walk over and climb up steps as a hologram when he's like walking up to talk to her? I'm like, what is that shit?
Dude, that's VR. We have that now. Next question. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, fair.
Nope. Fair. You're right.
He clearly has an iPad, iPhone.
Make it look like I'm stepping up. It's more dramatic this way. Okay.
He's going to go on tour.
Another thing I wanted to bring up, because I had a discussion with one of our listeners who was debating with me how the whole Ash Vok body thing was working. But I think it was pretty clear. It was clarified in this episode that what happened was Vok was surgically...
Shrunken.
Yeah. They took out altered. A whole bunch of extra Klingon meat because the core of there's a human, I guess, core to a Klingon, but Klingons have like extra organs and shit.
A humanoid type.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're able to cut out and remove a bunch of stuff from him and shrink him down to make him look like a human, and then they took and grafted on a fake personality, which is the Ash Tyler personality, on top of him. So the body is Klingon, and you were already mentioning this earlier.
Yes.
But I feel like, you know, that was a little bit unclear to some people.
If you're not quite sure, check out the after show. They have a producer who comes on, a writer, producer, who explains exactly like you said. They cut it out. They basically alter him. This is supposed to be something that Klingons have been able to do for quite a while, is to alter themselves to look like humans. And then they took the memories of Ash Tyler and his personality and grafted that onto Vok so that he would pass all the scans and things like that, which is why he's like, he tells stories, because it's not just Vok making it up. It's the memories of Tyler. So Tyler doesn't necessarily know he was Vok, but when they said the poem, then he comes out and Vok's like, he's always been in there. The body is Vok. It is Vok with some extra stuff.
So it's kind of like Blade Runner style. There's someone somewhere who's creating memories, sticking them in.
The only other issue I wanted to bring up is Stamets.
Oh, thank God. I thought it was going to be an issue with me.
Ashley, we have to have a talk.
Damn it.
This was all a big ruse.
Talk to layers you upon layers.
About your big gambling addiction. You got to stop it. Stamets. I'm cool with your gambling, by the way. Stamets. They act like he's the only one who could get that spore injection, but I feel like once you get trapped in a mirrorverse,
you better find a new way.
That's called extenuating circumstances. I think you can go ahead and break the ethical code and inject another human to have them be a transport vehicle for you to get back to home.
You know what? Try me.
Right.
I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Yeah, I end up in a weird flowery place with my dead lover. I mean, it's fine.
Okay, that does seem like potentially the worst thing.
That's not the worst thing.
Here's the thing.
Which one?
At the very least, even if you can't find, maybe you need Stamets to get back because he did the 133 jumps. Maybe he knows something there. But even if you can't do that, you need the Discovery to be able to flip and turn around and get the hell out of places.
Yeah, it's whole cool get the hell out of Dodge thing.
Well, so Stamets became special in this way because he had that cross with a tardigrade, right?
He took the tardigrade DNA sample, which I'm guessing that wasn't the only one they had, or they...
Right?
But it would have altered his DNA then, right?
Right.
So now isn't he also injectable?
Oh, they could just inject him, or they have the other thing. Yeah, either way, someone else like Tilly should have had a backup copy or something. Like for her to be all like, hey, I'm doing some pretty impressive stuff here, Saru. You going to give me a promotion?
It's like they have a PCR machine. Make more. Make some copies.
Calm the fuck down, Tilly. Let's see how this whole thing goes. Tilly, you done fucked up. Because Stamets flatlined. Great job, Tilly.
She did ask for the recommendation before the project was over.
I kind of did see that coming as soon as she was like, can I be recommended? Like, damn.
I was like, you just killed that dude. Like, yeah, something's not gonna going to make sideways it.
Here. Her hair looked fabulous, though. I just want to point that out. It was a nice dye job.
Sure, no, sure. I was going to say, like, that was a, yeah, it was, it, I was
I
thinking.
I miss the curls, but I like the color.
You know, it worked for her. This kind of mirror universe is working for Tilly.
So, okay, now that we've kind of wrapped up the discussion on the episode, what do you guys anticipate for the next episode and kind of going forward?
Have you guys seen the clips? Am I the only one who watches?
I haven't, so.
It's a lot of Giorgio, and it seems like there's more action. So I'm excited.
Giorgio's outfit looked bad
it
fucking
ass.
It
did look badass. Like, as someone who loves sewing and period pieces and costumes.
Gold warrior outfit?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You know, I think the hard thing for me is I look at her and I'm just like she's, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Like, she's bad. Like, she's just amazing. And you should just leave her alone. Like, that's why she's emperor. And so I'm trying to separate, because she may not be like a martial arts expert. Clyde's
wearing fealty already.
Yes.
I did have one other point of clarification that's a bit nitpicky. I wanted to run past y'all.
Do it.
The look Clyde's giving me is justified.
No, I'm curious.
And it is fair.
I'm lost.
So the reason that we didn't know who the Emperor of the Mirror World was is that she is a faceless this Emperor is a faceless power. Nobody knows exactly who it is, but they're all powerful. So why was she surprised when she was like, I'm the Emperor, guys? And they're just like, what, you don't know your own Emperor? Like, maybe not?
That's a very good
I thought point. Nobody knew what she looked like. Or did I misinterpret?
No, that was said. It was said that it was like the Emperor, at least Burnham
like,
told.
Like, you bow to your own Emperor or something?
Yeah,
like that?
And I thought some of her power came from the fact that the source of the power couldn't even be defined. It was kind of a faceless. And so clearly someone is behind the curtain, right? And it might be a wizard, it might not be.
Yeah.
But someone's behind the curtain, but it was unknown. If everyone on the bridge now knows.
Do you think that maybe the rise of the Emperor Georgiou happened during the time when they thought Burnham was dead? Like, maybe it is a bit of a reveal to Burnham because she was gone, but she had this relationship with Georgiou, and now all of a sudden Georgiou is the Emperor. And
well, maybe, but Georgiou was surprised that Burnham didn't recognize her, and everyone else on the the bridge was not like, oh my God, we're going to see the face of the Emperor.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, like all of that seems strange.
And
to
so
me.
If you look at it, Burnham, when Burnham left and was pronounced dead, she was already captain of the Shenzhou, which means that Georgiou had gone off, right?
At least if she wasn't captain of the Shenzhou in this world.
But yeah, but also when she showed up and they were like, you know, there's another ship. No one knew who the other ship was. And then when she appeared on screen, immediately everybody bowed. Like everybody, it was like everyone knew exactly who that was. But to your point, if this is a nameless faceless, then this is just somebody in a cool outfit.
Yeah.
Like you were like, if I don't know who the Emperor was and you show up on the screen, I'm like, who are you? And you go, I am the Emperor. Prove it. Like,
I mean, this is an entire bridge full of badass dudes.
Like, in a world where everybody's trying to usurp power. Like, if somebody just jumped us and say, hey, I'm the Emperor, like, how do I know that?
Well, and also, I interpreted, maybe, like, this is just sort of getting overly literary with my space shit, but, like, when they were like, oh, this horrible regime is led by a faceless emperor, and it's this huge power source, and it's like, oh, okay, well, there's a reason why organizations in those kind of dystopian universes do that from a kind of political kind of power source. And so that's kind of what I took it as. And so
it's unquestionable because who do you
question? It's unquestionable because who do you even question? It's just the way it fucking is.
Maybe.
And so that's why I was just sort of like, oh, it turns out it's her.
But maybe it was a big reveal to Burnham because they had a shared history that she's like, surprise, look at my new threads. I made Emperor. Isn't that
Are you
cool?
jealous? You're
you
jealous
owe me a beer.
This? Maybe. But yeah, I guess just it. How do you, I don't know, maybe I was just misinterpreting how kind of faceless the actual source of the power of the Empire was.
Mm-hmm. Or I wonder if the crew of the Shenzhou know. So maybe in a larger scale, no one knows. But
which is why Saru couldn't find it in his quick research.
Right.
Whatever.
But if Georgiou came from the Shenzhou, then maybe they know. And maybe that's why you're looking at this kind of discussion of aren't you going to bow, and everybody immediately bows, and they seem to already have this, you know, this relationship, and I'm curious to see what that relationship will be defined as in this universe, because as we know in the Prime universe, they're, you know, mentee mentor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm super excited for next week.
Yeah, sorry, small nitpick.
Yeah.
Moving on.
No, fair. And we'll see what we have in store, but I think this is a good place to go ahead and wrap things up, guys. Clyde and Ashley, thank you guys so much.
And listening audience, thank you guys so much. Once again, we want to remind you, if you want to help us out, please like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. We're at Star Trek Pod on both of those, I believe. You can also go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Give us a pledge of a dollar or two to support this podcast that you love. In exchange, we do little minis that we put up occasionally. And we also, the minis are little audio recordings that we talk about more Star Trek ancillary stuff. And we also give you guys access to our secret Slack channel for $2 an episode. It's a great deal.
Come on. We have a lot of fun on the Slack channel.
And Clyde, where can people find you?
You can find me at keyandclyde.com. That's K-E-I and Clyde.com. And you can check me and my wife out on the This Is Us podcast with Key and Clyde if you're into that show as well.
And Ashley?
Well, I guess sometimes on TV Dudes with you guys.
That's right.
On my Instagram feed, pictures of me and my cat at Squiddy, and I guess on our Slack channel.
Yeah. You can find me at Baron Von Grant on Twitter, and there you can see other little projects I'm doing if you look at my bio. And thanks, guys, so much. Until next week, long live the Empire!